Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This will be the 62nd episode of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. And today's podcast is kind of an unusual topic, although every so often I will have an unusual topic podcast. But this is more about, in fact, I think I'm going to title this podcast The Central Dogma of Studying, or I don't know, let's call it the Studying Manifesto. Whatever floats your boat. But basically, in today's podcast, I want to give my thoughts on how I think people should study, especially medical students and residents. Now, before I jump in, I think I want to say a few things though. First thing is, you probably shouldn't believe everything I say, okay? I've always been a believer in fact-checking what people say, or investigating things for yourself, right? I mean, who knows? I could be selling you snake oil right now. But these are my thoughts on things I think work in general for people and things I have seen to work in many people I've worked with, right? I mean, this is largely based on just my experience from, I mean, I've been a tutor and a teacher now for what? Probably like, I don't know, like 12 to 15 years, right? And I've worked with thousands and thousands of students. So this is something that just sort of comes from my experience teaching other people and also from learning from other people and also from being a learner myself, right? So take everything I say with a grain of salt, but just all I'm just pleading with this podcast is just hear me out, think for yourself, and hopefully you find this to be helpful. Or even if you don't agree with everything I say, at least to sort of point you in the right direction or give you some thoughts on potential steps you may be able to take to get to your desired destination study-wise. So, with that said, let's go ahead and jump right in. So, I'm going to break up this. Basically, the way I'm going to structure this conversation is we're going to discuss certain principles that I think apply to every form of learning. And then at the end, I will show you it's not necessarily like, they're not necessarily examples, but they're kind of like, it's kind of a logical ending to my conversation in this podcast. And you'll see what I mean. Just sort of follow me to the end and you'll see exactly what I mean. So let's start with the first principle. The first principle is the principle of understanding, right? Regardless of what you say, whatever you want to, if you ever want to learn anything, you need to understand it first. Don't try to blindly memorize things. And I mean, this is something that happens with medical students, residents, people that are involved in the field of medicine, right? Medicine involves a lot of information. It's a ton of stuff to learn in a short period of time. And usually the thought is, you know what? Yeah, some of this, I'll never use it again in the future. I just might as well just go ahead and just memorize it right now and just move on with my life. And the truth is, you do need to memorize stuff in med school. But the thing is, if you have a basis in understanding, it's much harder to forget things that you understood the first time. That's the first thing. Second thing is, if you get an unusual question that tests that concept in like a very weird, bizarre way, you can see through whatever crap they are trying to put in front of you in an exam question. You can see through all that crap and pick up on what is potentially the right answer. So I will encourage you, it's hard work, it's a lot of effort, but wherever possible, try to understand. And the truth is, there are certain things that don't necessarily have some degree of understanding behind them. And I will talk about those, how to handle those specific topic areas as we proceed with this podcast. Because I imagine some people say, oh, Divine, but there's some stuff that you just need to memorize code. There is no logic, there is no mechanism or whatever behind it. Yes, that is absolutely true. And I'm going to visit that shortly. Now, the second principle is kind of like a corollary from the first, right? So if obviously you're going to spend time understanding things, right? You need to start early. You need to start early, right? So med school involves a lot of information, right? But if you want to learn all that information in the detail and with understanding that you need for exams, then you need to start early. So some people may say that this involves you, oh, that you're the person that from the very first day of a block, you're beginning to study ahead and people think, oh, this person is overdoing it. Well, the thing is, at the end of the day, right, I would rather be a physician that really knows and understands my stuff than a person that waits till 3 days before an exam. And again, don't get me wrong, there are people that can certainly do that. They can sit down 3 days before a test, pull up all their notes, cram everything, dump it on a test, and they're good to go. But the thing is, again, at the end of the day, I ask myself, what kind of foundation are you building in 3 days as against the person that built a foundation over 3 weeks? I think if you ask that, yourself that question, you begin to say like, in the long term, right? Again, this may sound like me speaking in parables, but in the long term, what's the foundation that's going to hold up under scrutiny, right? So just sort of keep those things at the back of your mind when you're deciding if, like, your timeline with regards to studying. I give you an example. When I was a medical student at Hopkins, right, we had block exams, right? And in general, my strategy was from day one of a block, I started studying hard from the very beginning, right? Because the temptation is to be like, ah, this exam is in 4 weeks. Pfft, who gives a crap, right? But the thing is, if you spend the time from the very beginning studying hard, putting in a few hours every day, then when the time for the exam rolls around, you're not under so much pressure, you're not under so much duress, you're not wondering, oh no, what do I do? How do I get around this huge rim of information, right? And the thing is, when you start early, you don't have to start picking and choosing, okay, I need to concentrate my efforts here, I need to concentrate my efforts there, I will skip this slide, I will skip that slide, because you just have so much time before you. And the thing is, people may say, you're killing your lifestyle by not enjoying like the first few days of a new block or whatever. Why are you spending all this time studying when you could just like enjoy now and then leave it off to the end? The thing is, let's analyze that argument, right? So one thing that is very crippling for many medical students is test anxiety, right? Just anxiety about tests, anxiety about studying, anxiety about the med school process in itself. One very powerful way to feed that anxiety is to wait till the last minute. So the thing is, just for purposes of your own mental health, it makes sense to start early. That's one. Two, when you start late, right? Again, like I said, you may not have the time to learn things in as much detail as you need to learn them to do well on exams. In fact, the thing like many people may have noticed this about me, the 2 to 3 days before an exam are usually my least stressful days because I'm feeling very good about the test at that point, right? Versus a person that's like, oh, 3 days before a test, that's when they're doubling up their efforts and everything trying to study. It just does not make much sense. And there's really no need to put yourself through all that pain. So again, I will encourage you, say for example, right, you have your medical student, you've gotten into med school. You know that you have the USMLE Step 1 exam coming up like 2 years into your time in med school. I'm not saying that, oh, from day one, start spending 6 hours a day studying for Step 1. But think about it. Let's assume that you say, okay, you know what? My exam is in a year from now. And you set up a one-year plan and you study consistently for like 45 minutes to an hour every day for that big exam. You'll notice that when your dedicated period rolls around, you're not under so much stress, you're not under so much pressure, and you actually kind of enjoy the process because, again, you've laid a long-term foundation that will carry you in those big moments where you need to perform. Now, third principle is using resources that represent the universe of what you need to know. In fact, this is probably related to a later principle I'll discuss. But basically, what I mean here is not spreading yourself too thin. Okay, so the thing is, you've probably had those med school classmates where you ask them something, you ask them like, oh, what's the mechanism behind this, or what is this, 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 and that, and boom, they pull it out of a hat, and you're like, wait, man, how did you learn this piece of information? Like, how do you know this stuff? Like, how do you know right off the top of your head? The thing is, and again, this is why, before I jumped into this presentation, I said, you know what? Take everything I say with a grain of salt. But the thing is, I know a lot of smart people. I know a lot of people that have absolutely destroyed exams. At least I also know that from personal experience. And the thing is, in many cases, if you actually dig deep and analyze what these people know, you'll be surprised that they know a lot about a limited amount of information. Like that limited amount, they know it like they know their names. Versus a person that uses 10 different resources. So they're using like a larger breadth of resources in terms of trying to learn. But ask them random questions about that larger breadth and they don't know much about it. The way I sort of think of it is, it's like, let's assume you have a one-bedroom apartment, right? A one-bedroom apartment, I mean, I'm not saying you should live in a one-bedroom apartment. I'm just follow the analogy. But it's much easier to keep a one-bedroom apartment squeaky clean than it is. And that's working, I mean, obviously, if you have maids and servants or whatever, you can do whatever you want. But if you have a one-bedroom apartment, it's much easier to maintain it squeaky clean than if you have a 10-bedroom apartment. And you have to basically, if you want to maintain that 10-bedroom apartment squeaky clean, you literally have to work all day, every day to keep that bedroom clean, right? So the thing is, I see many medical students, they try this resource, that resource, this resource, that resource. And they're like, why am I so bogged down at the end of the day? Why do I feel like I have no time for a personal life, blah, blah, blah? The reason is you're using way too many resources, right? The key thing you want to do before you start studying for any exam or before you start any new block is always to ask yourself, is there one resource that potentially covers at least 90% of the information I need to know for a given block or for a given exam? If you figure out what that resource is, take that one resource, learn it and know it like you know your name. And then take the discipline to tune out every other thing that people are saying, right? Because the thing is, there is this, I guess, let's call it bad behavior that operates in med students where they see someone using a resource they're not using and they begin to get anxiety. They begin to panic. They're like, oh, crap, this person is using this resource. I'm not using it. So that means I cannot do as well as this other person. No, that is not true. You don't have to use everything that every person is using. You don't have to do that. You absolutely do not have to do that. The thing is, find a resource that works. Find a resource that represents most of what you need to know. It may not necessarily represent 100%, but usually my threshold, like my mental threshold for picking out study resources was, is there anything that has at least 90% of what I need to know for an exam? If you find that resource, pick it up. Learn the crap out of it and then tune out every other thing. I mean, I know this, I mean, personally from, say, for example, right, my micro block in medical school. I know many people during that micro block, they use this resource and that resource. They use like 5 or 6 different resources. They use Sketchy. They use their class notes. They use questions. They used first aid. They use this. They use that. Right? And they're like, oh, I'm using all these fancy resources. I'm making all these fancy diagrams. I'm looking at all these fancy charts. And you're like, wow. If during those periods I said, oh man, I'm not using all these resources these people are using, I would have freaked out, right? And again, I would have bogged myself down. But the thing is, during my micro block in med school, I had an amazing time. Yes, am I saying I did not study? Absolutely not. I studied. But I limited myself to like 1 or at the most 2 very good resources, spent pretty much all my time on those resources, and was able to do pretty well on my micro exam. So at the end of the day, find 1 or 2 good resources that hits 90% of the information you need to know, learn the crap out of those 1 or 2 resources, 1 preferably, and you should be able to get to your goal. Now, next principle is, in fact, you know what? Let me let me join this to the next principle, because I basically just wrote some bullet points down, and then I'm just discussing this like sort of like a freestyle format. The next principle here is finding context. Finding context. This is such an important principle, and because it's so important, I'm going to try to give as many examples as I can. The thing is, you cannot just blindly memorize things, right? In med school, don't get me wrong, you need to memorize, but you need to memorize with wisdom. There is a difference between memorizing something with wisdom and memorizing something blind, okay? There is a big difference between those two things, and the big difference is context. You see some people, they can reel out lists of things for you, but they don't have any sort of like logical means for learning and appreciating that information. The thing is, the super smart people you know, that you're like, wow, how do you just bring out this information from like the, just pull it out of your hat, like right off the bat like that. The reason behind that is they've learned that information in some logical way, shape or form. Let me give you some examples. The one that I love the most, right, is obviously if you can learn mechanisms, right? Piling on mechanisms. I mean, if you've ever listened to like any teaching by Dr. Golian, he's like a great pathology teacher, you see that he always tells you that if you can learn the mechanism behind something, you will never forget that thing. And that is one thing that I've always taken to heart for years and years and years and years. If you can understand the mechanism behind something, one, you will learn it so much better. Two, you will memorize it so much better. And three, if you're tested on that concept that you really understand the mechanism behind, you will have no problems. You'll have no problems getting things right on that concept. Because the thing is, the examinations you take as a medical student, as a resident, as a fellow, it doesn't matter, right? They're all just different representations of those concepts you have learned, right? They may not put it like in a classic way. They could put it in an unusual way. The thing is, when they give you an unusual presentation of a concept you're supposed to know, that's basically what defines a hard question. But if you have that deep understanding of mechanisms, I sort of look at it as, say, for example, a man is married to a woman, right? He knows his wife. He's been married to her for like 50, 60 years. Even if he's, let's assume his wife tries to trick him by like changing her voice or something, or trying to put on like a mask to look like a different person, that man that has been married to that woman for like 50, 60 years will be able to pick up who his wife is from like a mile away, right? Because he just knows it. Like, there's just a chord that just strikes deep down in his heart when his wife is around him, right? So the thing is, if you ever truly want to learn something, one very good way to put context behind that thing to make it much easier to learn and much better to learn is to try to pile on mechanisms. If you can infuse some mechanistic detail behind something you learn, you will establish much stronger connections in your brain that will help you understand that information and be able to apply it in unusual ways and also do well on exams, especially when you get unusual questions. But obviously, there are basically no mechanisms behind certain things, or there are certain things that just make absolutely no sense if you're trying to apply a mechanistic basis to them. So, are there other strategies you could use to try to make things contextual for learning? And again, this is going with the overarching principle of learning by context, right? What are some other things you can do? Some other things you can do are to, for example, build a clinical correlation around a specific topic. Right. So take, for example, right, the medicine review videos that I have. Right. It's about like 13 hours of video. One of the things I feel that makes those medicine review videos really good is I don't just presents the information in the context of, oh, how is AFib treated? Or, oh, how is aortic stenosis treated? How does aortic stenosis present? No. One thing I think that really made those medicine videos good is I spend the time to ask myself, okay, this concept, how would it very likely present in a clinical vignette or in a patient or on an exam? If you can put something in a clinical context, right, it makes it much easier to learn, because in your mind, you can build a mental image of, oh, wait, this thing presents like this. Even if you don't like, even if you cannot put your finger on the concept, but you're like, wait, this clinical presentation I'm seeing looks a lot like a clinical presentation I've been exposed to in the past. Once you can make that connection, you can usually pick out, like, this is the most likely etiology of whatever is going on, or this is the most likely concept that is being tested. If you can do that, it makes things very memorable and very easy to learn and remember. So, how do you use this strategy? The thing I tell people is try to look up the classic common presentation of a particular disease. If you know what that classic common presentation is, try to build your knowledge around that classic common presentation, and it makes it much easier to learn. Now, next thing is what are some other strategies that you could use to try to put context behind things? One other strategy I use is to try to compare one thing with the other, right? So the classic one, this is something you encounter in your third year of med school. The classic one is a patient that is hyperthyroid, right? Hyperthyroidism, right, can be caused by many things, right? It can be caused by Graves' disease, which is probably the most common cause. Actually, it's the most common cause in the US. It can be caused by a toxic multinodular goiter, right? It can be caused by a toxic adenoma, right? You can have the thyrotoxic phase of Hashimoto's thyroiditis, right? You can have postpartum thyroiditis. You can basically have many things that can cause a hyperthyroid state, or I guess you can call it like thyrotoxicosis. Now, the thing is, if you can build a chart that basically compares the radioactive iodine uptake results in each of these scenarios I just cited, it makes it much easier to remember. Because the thing is, you're no longer trying to remember individual things. You're now trying to remember multiple things in the context of multiple other things, right? So for example, like, oh, Graves' disease, you have diffuse uptake on a RIU scan. Toxic multinodular goiter, you'll find multiple areas, like discrete multiple areas of increased uptake on a RIU scan. And then, oh, toxic adenoma, you see like one focal discrete area of increased uptake on a RIU scan. Think about it. If you can sort of learn things by grouping, it's much easier to remember. It's much easier to remember groups of things than it is to remember singular individual things. Now, again, what is another strategy that could be used to add context to things? One other strategy is sort of like learning things in like a logical group, right? So let me give you an example, right? So the example I'll use here is like the biliary pathologies, right? So like cholelithiasis, cholecystitis, cholidocholithiasis, and ascending cholangitis, right? How have I always learned this information? The way I've always learned this information is in my mind, visualizing a diagram of the biliary system, right? So it's like, oh, you have the gallbladder that drains into the cystic duct, right? And then you have the right and left intrahepatic ducts coming together to form the common hepatic duct. And then the common hepatic duct joins up with the cystic duct to form the common bile duct, okay? And then the pancreatic duct joins up with the common bile duct to drain into the ampulla of Vater, right? Into the early part of the duodenum, right? So think about it. If you construct that diagram in your mind, you then need to start putting multiple things along that path to sort of figure out like, okay, oh, if you have a stone here, this is the pathology it creates. If you have a stone here, this is the pathology it creates, right? So for example, you could say, oh, if you have a stone in the cystic duct, well, that can cause like biliary colic. But however, if behind that obstructing stone, you have an itis, you have inflammation, then you have cholecystitis. And then you take it a step down further. You're like, oh, okay, you know what? But what if this stone is not in the cystic duct? What if it's in the common bowel duct? Well, if it's in the common bowel duct, that'll be choledocholithiasis. But you know what? There's this principle that, oh, if a stone obstructs something, you can have an infection build up behind it. Well, if that infection builds up behind the stone in the common bowel duct, that is ascending cholangitis. Boom. Right? So notice, you've learned four pathologies just by constructing a simple diagram that helps you group things together. In fact, I'll say this is probably one of the most important reasons why First Aid for the USMLE Step 1 is a great book. First Aid for the USMLE Step 1 has its faults, but one, I'll say probably like the most important parts of First Aid are the summary diagrams that it has. Summary diagrams, right? For example, right, I mean, there is like First Aid has this, I'll just pick out a few examples, right? Like, say, for example, you're studying micro, right? They have a gram-positive algorithm. They have a gram-negative algorithm, right? They have diagrams that summarize the diuretics. They have diagrams that summarize the antibiotics, right? The classic thing I used to do right before exams are to say, okay, you know what? I've learned all this information. Well, let me go ahead and look at this summary First Aid diagram. You look at those diagrams and then just try to start explaining things to yourself. You're like, oh, this is how this diuretic fits here. This is how that diuretic fits there. Oh, this is how this antibiotic does this. This is how the antibiotic does that. If you have those logical diagrams or logical mechanism for sort of like putting things that it sort of looks like steps in a process, it just makes things that much easier to learn, that much easier to remember. So I'll encourage you, if you can find a logical diagram that explains something, or you can make your own logical representation of something, by all means, pursue that route. It makes learning certain things, especially things that have no rhyme or reason behind them, makes them much easier to remember. Makes them much, much, much easier to remember. Now, let's jump to the next principle, right? So the next principle is the use of practice questions. And this is where I probably have a fair amount of disagreement with people. The thing is, the common thing you hear when you speak to people is, oh, I use practice questions to learn the material. Now, here's the thing. Here's my belief. Practice questions are phenomenal. They're fantastic. They're great. If you do more practice, chances are you will do pretty well on an exam. But the thing is, I feel that people use practice questions for the wrong reasons, right? So the thing is, I generally do not subscribe to having practice questions be your first exposure to a given content. That, just to be perfectly honest, makes absolutely no sense to me. The thing that makes more sense to me is having some kind of exposure in the form of like, oh, like a reading you've done or a video you've watched or something. Having some kind of like first exposure to the material from somewhere, and then using those practice questions to fact check your understanding or to guide further study, right? Because the thing is, and this is something I've noticed with many medical students, right? You see people say, oh, I'm learning so much from you, world. Like, oh, you know what? I'm going to just completely turn down First Aid, blah, 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 and all that stuff. I'm just going to like just focus solely on you, world, read the explanations, and I'm good to go. The thing is, there are many people that have done very well using that strategy. But the thing is, at the end of the day, you probably have personal experience with this. And again, I'm saying this because I've had experiences with many people I've taught, many people I've tutored that have run into this problem. Let's assume you read a UWorld explanation like 3 weeks ago. Ask yourself, right here, right now, do you really remember the bulk of that explanation you read? The thing I've noticed is that many times when people say they are using questions to learn, yes, in the moment when they are reading that answer explanation, it's making perfect sense to them. They're like, oh, this material is flying right into my brain. But the thing is, at the end of the day, what you may just be doing is memorizing an answer explanation, as against deeply understanding an answer explanation. Here's one thing I will suggest. Just sort of do it as like a controlled experiment on your own self. Take two pieces of information and try two different approaches. First approach, learn that information from a book or a video or whatever, and then do practice questions on that and read the explanations, versus find practice questions on another topic, just read those explanations, do the questions, and then compare, like, under those two circumstances, where do you feel like you've learned more? Or where do you feel like you remember things better? Or where do you feel like you're getting a deeper understanding and appreciation for the information you just learned? I will let you answer that question on your own. But I encourage people. And the thing is, people may say, but Divine, it takes so much time to study something first. The truth is, I'm not saying, oh, your first exposure, try to learn every bit of every piece of information before you attack a subject. No. Even if you just do like a cursory, just 30 minutes, just blow by and just say, okay, oh, these are the major topics in this thing. These are like the big picture concepts that they're discussing before you approach questions. That is a lot better than making your very, very first exposure to a given material be in the form of practice questions. Again, this is where I want you to not misinterpret what I'm saying. Practice questions are great. I use practice questions all the time. But the thing I've noticed is that I and many people I've tutored and many people I've worked with, they gain a lot more from practice questions when they have some knowledge base before they approach those practice questions. And the thing is, having that knowledge base also makes it much quicker for you to go through those practice questions. And the thing is, I can almost promise you this. You gain a lot more from practice questions when you have a knowledge base. It's something you may not believe until you personally try it for yourself. Now, next principle is something that, again, choose what works for you. But the principle I will say is try to concentrate your learning on a part of the day that works for you, right? And again, these are my own thoughts on things, but I personally believe that most people could probably learn best if they concentrated their learning in earlier, during like earlier parts of the day, right? Because the thing is, when you begin to let your studying drag into like later part, so say for example, right, I'll give you my own personal example. For me, I love studying in the mornings, right? In the mornings, things just fly into my brain very easily. But once it gets like to like 5, 6 p.m. in the evening, I need to apply a lot more effort to learn the same piece of information. Versus in the morning, I could literally like sit down for an hour and digest like 20 pages of information in that 1 hour. Very easily without any qualms. Versus waiting in the evening. In the evening, I may like be able to digest like 5 or 6 pages an hour. And then it ends up taking me like 4 or 5 hours to learn the same piece of information I could have learned in the morning in an hour, right? So that is why, in general, most of my studying is concentrated in the very early hours of the morning, between like 4 and 7 a.m. Those are like power periods for me. I learn things much better during those time intervals, and it's something I found to work for me. And again, what works for me may not necessarily work for you, right? So you may be the person that learns very well and very quickly at night. If that's what you've noticed with your body's physiology, by all means do that. But I'll say in general, for the great majority of people, and again, I mean, obviously, I can't say I have a sample size of 7 billion people, but I probably have a sample size of about 5,000 to 6,000 people that I've tutored or taught in some way, shape, or form over the course of the last couple of years, right? And the thing I will say is that for many people, they can actually learn a lot if they concentrated their studying in the morning versus late in the evening. Because that's just kind of how the body works, right? The way in general the body has been set up is for you to sleep at night, wake up in the morning, get stuff done, and then retire in the evening. So I feel like trying to do things in the evening when you're supposed to retire is kind of like counterproductive to what the body's natural physiology dictates. But again, I have certainly seen people that mornings and afternoons are just evil times for them. But in the evenings, they just completely perk up, right? That is a question you have to answer for yourself, and I will let you answer it accordingly. Now, next principle is being a good test taker. So this one is a little more on the difficult side of things, right? So the thing is, you can learn all you want for a test, right? And the truth is, in general, if you know everything that's going to be tested on a given exam, chances are you do pretty well on that exam, right? I mean, like, you probably know this from undergrad. There are those classes where they'll give you like a course syllabus, you memorize the syllabus, you dump it on a test, you get 100. Easy as pie, right? But the thing is, there are certain exams, and it's, again, as a med student, you'll be exposed to many of these kinds of exams, right? Like the USMLE Step 1 or Step 2 CK or Step 3. You can know everything and do, again, you can do pretty well. But the thing is, if you want to get in those very high score ranges, you do need to be a good test taker. Like, that is the one thing I have seen that can elevate people from one percentile, sort of like basically like taking themselves to the next level in terms of percentile scores. That's being a good test taker. And again, being a good test taker is hard. It takes a lot of practice. But I personally believe that it's a skill that can be learned, right? And I'm saying this, one, from personal experience, right? I mean, I've been a good test taker in the past, but I feel like probably over the past like 5-6 years, I've become an even better test taker, right? And there are people that I know personally that have learned how to be good test takers. I mean, there are people I've worked with, they've been like just completely terrible test takers, but over time, they became much better at test taking. So it's a skill that you can learn, but it requires effort on your part. So, what kind of effort is required to be a good test taker? The thing is, you need to spend not just a lot of time taking practice tests, but you also have to spend probably more time than you spend taking those tests, analyzing them, right? So this was probably one of the more painful parts of my studying, going through practice exams. The thing is, I mean, literally, it may take me like 3 hours to take a practice test. But to be perfectly honest, sometimes it may take me like 7-8 hours to review that practice test. And the thing is, you may be saying like, oh, Devine, 7-8 hours? Are you just spending that time like looking up pieces of information you didn't know? Yeah, I'm spending some of that time looking up pieces of information I didn't know. But the honest truth is, I probably spend about half of that time just asking myself, okay, Devine, what were your thoughts behind this question? What were you thinking when you were getting this question wrong? What were you thinking when you were getting this question right? Or if you didn't even know the concept that was being tested, is there a way you could have finagled your way? Is there a way you could have sort of like mapped out, like follow the course that essentially would have made you get this question right, even if you did not know the concept? I ask myself all those and many other questions as I analyze my practice tests. And I feel that over time, if you begin to do that kind of intense, detailed question analysis, you can begin to pick up on certain systematic error patterns in the way you think, in the way you approach questions. And when you can figure out those error patterns and begin to eliminate them consciously, you'll notice that you begin to do a lot better on exams. Really, like, when you become a great test taker, it just makes the path to doing super well on exams much easier. Because the thing is, it sort of builds that confidence within you that, you know what, even if I don't know all the concepts that are going to be tested on this exam, I'm still going to get most of the answers right. Because believe it or not, there are many questions I have gotten right in my life, not because I knew the concept, but because I just knew that, you know what, based on these core principles I know with regards to test taking, this is likely not the right answer. This is likely not the right answer. Oh, this is very likely the right answer. That, like, almost like sixth sense when you're taking an exam It comes from being a good test taker. And again, it's a skill that can be learned. It's something you can absolutely learn on your own. If you just spend a lot of time analyzing your tests, it's something you can, if, say, for example, right, you, let's assume you had like a buddy or a close friend that has, say, for example, you had, let's say you had like a, let's say you're a second year med student, right? And let's say you have like a third or fourth year med student that has experience with the exam you're planning to take. If you could pick that person's brains, if they could watch you like taking a test, or they could review a practice test with you and sort of see, oh yeah, wait, why did you get this question wrong? What were you thinking when you were taking this, when you were answering this question? Those people that have experience with the test you're trying to take, they can pick out patterns. It's kind of like having a coach, right? I mean, that's why great like basketballers or soccer players or whatever have coaches, right? They can spot errors in your game and basically point out those errors, correct you, and constantly grade and grill you on those errors if you keep making them. So that at some point you just sort of snap out of making those errors and you get to your potential. So you can learn this on your own. You can find someone that has experience with the test you're preparing for to sort of like analyze your thinking and the way you're approaching questions. And just keeping up with that practice is one thing that I have found to be very helpful with becoming a good test taker. And again, even if you're a person that you're like, oh man, I'm always average on an exam, I promise you, like, again, I'm not saying this just from personal experience. I'm saying this from the experiences of many people I know. There are many people I know that were initially bad test takers, but at the end, they became phenomenal test takers, right? So again, it's possible, okay? It's something you can learn. You just need to be willing to put in the effort to analyze practice tests. Okay. Now, the next principle is knowing the kinds of tests you're taking, right? So the thing is, the same strategy may not necessarily work for every exam, right? So for example, in undergrad, we had these exams where you got the course syllabus, you read the course syllabus, you understood the course syllabus, you committed all of it to memory, you get a perfect score. Those exams, like, you don't need to be a good test taker or anything like that to do well on those exams. All you need to do is, you just need to know all the information that a professor expects you to know, and it's going to show up on the exam. But there are other exams I had in undergrad, right? Like my organic chemistry exams, or exams you have in med school, like step one, step two CK, for example, where knowing all the information is not all you need to do. You need to do other stuff in addition to knowing the information to really kill those exams. So it's one thing I will encourage you to do. Don't approach an exam blindly. Don't just say, oh, I've done this before. Well, if I've been successful with this strategy before, that means I'm going to be successful with this strategy if I apply this to this exam. That is not always true. That is absolutely positively not always true. Different tests demand a different kind of thinking, right? So, like my most recent example is with the USMLE Step 3, right? The thing is, for the Step 2 CK exam, you can do well by a sort of like having a certain kind of thinking in the way you approach questions. But the thing I was noticing when I was preparing for Step 3 is, whenever I applied like that same kind of thing, I was like, wait, I still keep getting questions wrong. And I had to make certain adjustments in the way I thought about things to begin to get answers correctly. Questions correct. So that's one thing I will encourage you to do. Again, tailor your study strategy, tailor your study thinking to the kind of exam you're about to take. And again, you may not necessarily know about the exam you're taking. Ask someone that has taken that exam, right? Ask someone, right? People are always willing to give back. Ask someone, and they may be able to point out those unique things relating to the exam that you're preparing for. And then the last principle that I'll talk about, this is why I said this podcast will kind of end in a weird way, but the last principle I want to talk about is repetition, right? Repetition is probably the cornerstone of any good study strategy. If you don't repeat, you will not memorize. You will not learn things the way you're supposed to learn them for exams. Repetition, repetition, repetition. Repetition is so key. It is so key. And here is why I think repetition makes sense. The thing is, the more times you go through something, let me tell you two things that I've noticed when you pursue a path of repetition. The first thing is, whenever you repeat something, you learn something new each time. You learn something new each time. You may not necessarily pick up on everything on your first go through a given body of information. But if you go through that thing many times, your brain will sort of rewire itself to begin to pick up on something new that you did not learn during your previous session going through that material. This is something that I can almost opine that pretty much everyone has experienced at some point. The more times they go through something, the more times they begin to wait, how did I not see this 2 days ago when I was reading this thing? They're like, wait, am I just seeing this for the first time? That's a benefit you're getting because you're repeating that information. That's one. Two, and it's kind of like a corollary from the first thing. The thing is, the more times you repeat, you go through things, the more you begin to pick up on unusual relationships that people may not necessarily see. What do I mean by that? There are certain times where I've tried to learn certain things, and on my fourth or fifth pass through the material, I'm like, wait, so this is how this thing actually works. The reason I picked up on those things is because my brain is beginning to say, okay, you know what, Divine, you've looked at this thing the first time, you've looked at this thing the second time, you've looked at this thing the third time, you're looking at this thing the fourth time, you're learning, you're picking up on some new things, some like nuances, as you go along with multiple repeats. Those new nuances you're picking up on may begin to help you establish unusual relationships between those things that you're trying to learn. So I will encourage you, it doesn't matter whatever study strategy you use, if you slap on repetition with that study strategy, you'll learn things so much better. And the thing is, and this is where I'm going to sort of end this, there are multiple means of repeating things. And this is where it becomes about the uniqueness of the individual. Many times, right, when people say, oh, I want to repeat something, the first thing that comes to mind is Anki. Again, don't take this as me saying I have anything against Anki. In fact, actually, Anki is a phenomenal resource. Anki is great. It's almost magical in a sense. Because again, I know many people that have used Anki and they have absolutely crushed their exams. But I probably know just as many people that have used Anki in great excruciating detail, and they did not do as well as they expected on their exams. The thing is, the fact that everyone is using Anki does not necessarily mean that Anki is your unique means of repeating information. So I'll say that again. The fact that everyone is using Anki does not mean that Anki is your unique constitutional means of repeating information. Going through the same information multiple times is a principle. It's a study principle. You need to use it regardless of the study strategy you use for you to be successful. But the specific means you use for repeating that information is what defines you as a unique learner. You cannot say, for example, right, for a person like myself, Anki is not a great means for me to repeat information. It's just a means of repeating information that I've never found to be fun for myself. It's fun. In fact, like, I know some people that Anki is almost like a game to them. Those people obviously should use Anki to power through that body of information multiple times. But a person like myself, I mean, obviously that's part of the reason why I have a podcast website in the first place. I'm a person that learns phenomenally well if something is put in an audiovisual format. I can listen to a podcast 12 times if I have to learn something or to repeat something, versus having to go through an Anki deck like 12 times to acquire the same amount of information. The thing is, when you figure out the means of repetition that works well for you, you'll be so much more efficient with your studying. There are people that use Anki and it is crazy efficient for them. But for a person like me, can I learn something well by using Anki? Absolutely, I can. But it will take me probably like 3 or 4 times the amount of time I could have spent learning that same piece of information by just watching a video or listening to an audio tape. And the thing is, the thing that works best for you may not necessarily exist. If they don't exist, create them, right? I'll give you a classic example. During my pediatrics rotation, right, I knew that the resource that represented the body of information I had to learn was BRS Pediatrics. BRS Pediatrics, I mean, again, I'm not saying this to push any specific resource on anyone, but I'm telling you that in general, BRS Peds contains pretty much everything you need to know to crush your third year pediatrics MBME exam. So I knew that, okay, that was the unfortunate reality that was staring me down. So I was like, you know what? I might as well go ahead and create my own BRS Pediatrics audio resource, right? So I literally got the book and created audio tapes of each chapter of the book. And when I created those audio tapes, I just listened to those audio tapes multiple times. So over the course of the 8 weeks of my pediatrics rotation, I was probably able to go through the BRS Pediatrics book like 5 or 6 times. How did I do that? Because I put the repetition, the task of repeating that information in a format that works well for me. I did not, if I had said, you know what, oh, Divine, you know what, take BRS Peds, make an Anki deck of BRS Peds. One, I would have given up after the first like 3 or 4 chapters. But 2, even if I toughed it out to the end, I probably would not have been able to make my way throughout the entire book pursuing that strategy. Okay, so the thing I tell people is find the means of repetition that works well for you. If Anki is what works well for you, by all means do that. But the thing is, there are some people for which Anki is not the best means or the most efficient means of repeating information. For some people, it may be videos, it may be audio, like myself. For some people, it may actually be getting a book. Believe it or not, the good old-fashioned, like, buy a book, read that book 4 or 5 times, it actually works well for certain people. I mean, literally, there is a friend I have that this guy literally all he does is he just buys a book that represents all he needs to know, reads that book like 5 or 6 times, and then he destroys his exams. That's the method that works for him. There are other people where what may work for them is teaching. That's actually another thing that actually works for me. And again, I'll just sort of throw it out there. If you can teach something, you know it pretty well. If you can teach something well, you know it pretty well. Because the thing is, in the process of teaching, you're going to get asked a lot of questions, right? Say, for example, right, you're preparing to give a lecture on a topic, right? The sheer terror of knowing that people may ask you a question and you may not be able to answer it is enough motivation to make sure you learn that information in the deepest way possible. So if you can teach something multiple, I mean, take for example in undergrad, right? This is like classic teaching as a means of repetition. About 2 years before I took the MCAT, and again, this was when organic chemistry was a big part of the MCAT, right? Like 2 years before I took the MCAT, that was when I took my first organic chemistry class, right? After I took my OChem class, the next thing I did was I started teaching OChem to anyone I could find, right? To groups of people. In fact, I became a tutor that basically taught OChem, right? And the thing is, after teaching OChem so many times and answering so many OChem questions from so many people, I became so good at OChem that even if I saw a mechanism that I had never seen before, I could predict what that mechanism could be at about the time I was like ready to graduate from undergrad, because I was like, wait, yeah, like this principle, that principle, these are the things that underlie electron pushing. A person that's rich in electrons gives electrons to a person that's poor in electrons, nucleophile versus electrophile. And by putting those pieces of information together in the context of, again, the multiple nuances I picked up on as I repeated that information by teaching, I could take, you could give me like, oh, Divine, take this molecule, take that molecule. How will this reaction work? And again, even if I had never seen this reaction before, I had never seen this mechanism before, I could just go off of those core principles and all the repetition I had done to pick up on nuances that people may not necessarily establish because they've not had multiple repetitions. And I could use that to begin to predict certain things. Same thing with these standardized tests, like step 2CK, like step 1, like step 3. You can almost guarantee yourself that you're going to see questions on those exams that you have never seen before, right? I mean, if anyone tells me that they took any of the USMLE exams and every single question they saw, they had seen that concept somewhere in the past, I think I'll be willing to call you a liar. The thing is, at the end of the day, the thing that makes certain people get certain questions correct, even if they've never seen the information before, is the fact that they've repeated other pieces of information so well, they have picked up nuances from those multiple repeats, that they take those nuances and begin to apply them to unusual scenarios, and then end up getting those questions correct. So, I will encourage you, find your preferred means of repetition. It could be Anki, it could be videos, it could be audio, it could be reading a book, it could be teaching, it could be whatever. Find it. It's unique. It's almost like, think of it as like your repetition phenotype or your repetition genotype, if you may, right? Your repetition genotype is unique to yourself as an individual. Okay, once you can figure out that repetition genotype and use it with whatever you're trying to learn, you can become a very good learner and you can become a very good test taker. So, I know this has been a lot of rambling, and I know that I've said a lot of ums and ahs here, but this was something where I literally just woke up this morning, which happens to be my one day off over the past 2 weeks, and I just wrote down some bullet points and then just said, you know what, I'm just going to whip out my phone and just record a podcast that just basically mentions my thoughts on these bullet points I wrote down. And again, you may say like, why should I waste the 1 hour listening to this? Or why did you just waste the 1 hour listening to this podcast? The thing is, I very strongly believe that if you take these pieces of advice to heart, you will become a better learner. I can almost promise you that. I mean, again, you can't say anything with 100% certainty, but I can say that the overwhelming majority of people that I've worked with that have ended up being very successful are people that used a lot of this advice, okay? They used it conscientiously. So again, I will encourage you to just think about this, take everything I just said with a grain of salt, but evaluate it for yourself and pick out the good, discard the potential bad, and go from there, okay? And before I end, I just want to voice that I do one-on-one tutoring for the USMLE exams and for med school exams and for the medicine in training exam. That's for residents, obviously. So if you ever want private tutoring for those, feel free to reach out to divineinterventionpodcasts@gmail.com, or you can use the contact or tutoring thing at the top of the website and reach out to me and we can set something up. So I wish you all the best. I will try to use my one day off in the past 2 weeks so wisely to make a few more podcasts before I get back on service tomorrow. So feel free to reach out with any questions. I hope you have a wonderful day and I hope the Lakers win their game today. God bless. See you next time.